darkness in Aaron's eyes. Alex broke into a cold sweat as new thoughts, new realizations surfaced. He whispered, "You reported me, too." It was not a question. For Alex, there was no question anymore. He stared at his brother, forcing Aaron to either hold his gaze or look away. Aaron's eyes filled with contempt.
"Get out of my sight, you filthy, useless, unwanted!"
He spat the words out like icicles.
"I did my duty. You failed. I hold no blame for anyone else's failures. Not yours, not Samhede's, not that ranger girl, and especially not the general's son. You are all deserving of your horrible fate."
There was a terrible pause, the identical twins standing face to face in the tiny dormitory room. Aaron's jaw squared harshly, his nostrils flared, and his dark eyes as lifeless as marbles, while his mirror image absorbed the insults, his deep chocolate eyes changing from anger to hurt to pity. Alex spoke quietly.
"You're right about one thing. We are all deserving."
"Thank you," he said. "You did us all a great favor."
And with that, Alex turned to the magical door and stumbled blindly through it, into the brightly lit office of Mr. Today, before the shuddering, angry sobs broke loose. And then large, warm arms enveloped him, the arms of the mage himself, who held Alex tightly and let him snivel on his robe, and then patted his back, saying, "There, there," until Alex could stop sobbing long enough to speak. He looked at Mr. Today, all of the secrets of the past several months dancing around him, and he knew there was no way to lie around this mess.
"I'm sorry, sir," Alex whispered.
Mr. Today nodded. "I know, my boy, I know. Let's hear everything about it now, all right?" He patted a chair and urged Alex to sit, and then he moved behind the desk and sat as well. They stayed for a moment in contemplative silence. And then the 3D door creaked open once again, and a disheveled, dark-haired boy with eyes as round as saucers peered into Mr. Today's office. The Visitor. Mr. Today and Alex looked up at the noise. "Good evening," Mr. Today said, standing up rather abruptly. He flicked his wrist and the blackboards on the wall behind him went dead. "Do come in. Care for tea?" Aaron nearly turned around and slammed the door, but he hesitated, looking from his brother to the stranger with him. "Who are you?" he asked, in a disdainful voice.
"I am commonly known to the people of Quill as the Death Farmer," Mr. Today said. "And this is my office. Please," he urged again. "Come in."
"Yes," echoed Alex in a hollow voice. "Come in, Aaron. No one will harm you." "Why should I trust you?"
Aaron's eyes were slits. Alex looked away as his own eyes burned.
"After all I've done for you, you still will not trust me."
He shook his head.
"I'll get the tea."
"Mind you, don't have it sent up through that tube," Mr. Today said lightly. "There's a kettle on the stove in the kitchenette."
Alex nodded and walked across the hallway to the small kitchen. He glanced at the tube in the corner of the room, but stayed well away from it. By the time he returned to Mr. Today's office with a tray, Aaron had stepped into the office, but he had kept the door ajar and his hand on the frame. He looked like he'd seen a ghost, and that was exactly how he felt, too. Mr. Today invited him to sit, but Aaron shook his head.
"Well then," Mr. Today said, taking over the conversation, for which Alex was very grateful. "I expect you want to know what this world is all about. The door onto which you are hanging for dear life is magical, as is this world you have entered. As you can see," Mr. Today said as he poured tea and added several sugars to his own, "your brother Alex is not dead. He is very much alive, and quite happy, I presume. He misses you dreadfully. Though," Mr. Today continued as an afterthought, "it appears to me you've been quite horrible to him at times. But we'll reserve judgment, won't we, Alex?"
"Of course,"
Alex said softly. After nearly a year in Artime, and facing his twin on Alex's own turf, Alex felt self-conscious and could think of nothing more to say. He remembered his own immersion into this world, and was glad now for the fairly ordinary office environment Aaron was taking in. Perhaps this would help Aaron ease into it more slowly. Aaron glanced suspiciously from Mr. Today to Alex, and back to Mr. Today again.
"What do you want from me?"
Mr. Today chuckled.
"Good heavens!
We want nothing that you have, Aaron. But I suppose we could offer you sanctuary, so to speak. A new life, if you wanted."
Alex added, "And safety from Will Blair, who wants to kill you." He glanced at Mr. Today, who raised an eyebrow at Alex.
"It's true, Mr. Today. I heard him talking. He and—"
Alex hesitated, and then went on.
"He and Samhede, they're making a door too, like I did, and they've almost got it done. Will is going to use magic to look like Aaron, and then kill Aaron and dispose of him so that no one knows what happened, and then he's going to take Aaron's place. Though I'm not sure Samhede knew all that before today," he said.
Mr. Today listened with interest and concern, and then looked back at Aaron and shrugged.
"Sounds horrifying. I'd listen to your brother if I were you," he said. "Additionally, I worry about you getting very uncomfortable standing there by that door forever. You won't get to see the grounds that way. Plus, Will Blair will find you easily enough if we leave that door up."
Aaron shook his head.
"I can't even understand what you are saying."
Alex, in spite of the dire situation, could not hide the small smile that tugged at the corner of his mouth.
"I know how you feel, Aaron. None of us could understand a thing until we saw it for ourselves."
"None of you could?" Aaron asked.
"How many of you are there?"
Alex glanced at Mr. Today, wondering how much information he should give to Aaron. Mr. Today nodded and smiled.
"I'm not fond of secrets. You may tell him everything you wish to, Alex."
Alex took a deep breath.
"I don't know where to start."
He sighed and looked into his brother's eyes, searching for anything but the cold hardness that had filled them only moments before.
"We are the Unwanteds," he began. "Hundreds of us. And this is the magical world called Artime."
Aaron the Wanted could hardly believe his eyes or ears. Every moment he stood there, he felt more and more overwhelmed. This office was far more beautiful than even the High Priest Justine's. Everything looked shiny and new.
Magic, spells, and art, and all sorts of other words Aaron had never heard before.
His brother certainly seemed convinced about the Will Blair character, and the old man seemed to believe him, but Aaron wasn't buying it. Still, he wondered if all of this could be true. And slowly he realized that if it were true, if all the Unwanteds were truly here, and he had been the one to discover them, he would be greatly rewarded by the High Priest Justine. It was all too crazy to be true. It was like the craziest dream he'd ever had. And he didn't like it one bit. These dreams were getting way out of control. After what felt like an hour or more, Aaron grew tired of standing by the doorway.
"Come on, Aaron. Let me show you Mr. Today's mansion," Alex said.
Aaron looked at his brother and felt a small blip of something deep inside, but within a moment it was gone.
"No, I've got an early appointment at the palace," he said brusquely.
Alex gripped the edge of the desk.
"What?" "I follow the law, and I do my duties." "You'll never learn that, will you?"
But,
Alex sputtered.
"But you should stay here. You'll be safe here. Don't you understand what we're trying to tell you?"
Aaron stared at Alex, and the identical twins stood motionless, facing each other. Finally, Aaron spoke.
"I have never understood you, and I never will. Please leave me alone."
And with that, Aaron swiveled around and pushed open the 3D door, stumbled a bit on the unnatural threshold that was made by the painting not quite reaching the floor, and slammed the door behind him. Alex smashed his hand down on Mr. Today's desk.
"No!"
Broken ties.
"I'm sorry, sir. I made such a mess of everything,"
Alex said as he dropped into a chair. Mr. Today snapped his wrist again, and the scenes reappeared on the blackboards behind his desk. They watched Aaron shake his head and flip the light out on the blackboard that showed his room. The old man sat behind the desk and pressed a finger to his lips, looking disappointed and perhaps angry, but saying nothing, as if he were waiting to hear more.
"I mean, what was I thinking? I've ruined everything."
A look of pure agony washed over Alex's face as he realized the extent of the trouble he had created.
"Oh," he groaned, "I should have talked to you or Miss Octavia or someone, but I was so sure I could convince him to come, and that would be that, you know. Quill would wonder where he went, but they'd never guess. Then I just found out tonight what Will was planning to do, and, well, I went a little crazy. I had to beat him to Aaron, and I didn't think it through. I mean, he's close, Mr. Today, really close."
He rubbed his temples and let his head sink back in the chair.
"And I know I shouldn't have done it. I just was so sure. I mean, we're twins. I know him. Or at least I thought I did. I really thought I had him there. For a split second there was just a flicker of something, like he wanted to believe me. But back when I was in his room, he said...
Alex relayed the entire conversation, starting from the beginning. Mr. Today just listened and waited for Alex to finish. The look on his face changed as the story came out.
"And you know what?"
Alex asked.
"He's right. He did his duty to Quill, and I failed. And now I failed to do my duty for you, too."
Alex slumped back in his chair, miserable. They sat in silence for a moment.
"Are you quite finished?" Mr. Today asked kindly. "I don't wish to interrupt until you've gotten it all out. Every last nasty bit."
Alex looked up.
"He reported me. It was him, way back when we were 9. He was already turning people in back then. Not just me. Megan, Sam Heed, and Will Blair, too. I never knew anything could hurt like this."
Mr. Today nodded. "I know. You weren't the only ones. He turned in a great deal more than that."
"He did?"
"Yes. Every year before the Purge, I meet with Justine and go over the reports. Aaron has had his sights set on the palace for some time now." Alex shook his head sadly.
"All this time," he said, "I had no idea. Why didn't you tell me?"
"Because it's hurtful, and you wouldn't have believed me. I guess you needed to see it for yourself." Mr. Today sighed. "And once I saw the door and figured out what had happened, I, too, hoped you might have been able to change his mind. Alas!" Then his face brightened a little. "I'm glad to have you here, though. Aren't you glad to be here?"
"Yes," said Alex. "But it still just kills me. How could he be so horrible? How could he be so evil without me knowing it? He was my closest everything. And I feel so stupid. I should have known, back in the mud."
He sighed.
"What happens now?"
His voice grew fearful. "We'll never know until it happens," Mr. Today said. "But it's likely that Aaron will report having seen you, even though he promised he wouldn't. And it's likely that Will Blair will succeed eventually in getting his door finished. Which one of them acts first, only time will tell."
"I'm really sorry."
"Come now, Alex. Let's be done with the apologies," Mr. Today said. "Let me tell you, my boy, I admit to holding out the slightest hope for the twin connection in getting him to stay here once he walked in the door. I've witnessed that power before. But I should have known better." Mr. Today trailed off deep in thought, and it was quiet in the room for several minutes. Alex, who was completely spent, drifted off to sleep in the chair during the silence, but he startled awake when he heard a growl at the door. Standing there was a most enormous grey wolf.
"Hello, Marcus. Claire said you wanted to see me."
The wolf's gravelly voice was as deep as a bassoon. Mr. Today rose to his feet and smiled warmly.
"Gunner,"
How good of you to come. I'm sure you recognize Alex Stowe. Alex, this is Gunner. You may have seen him a time or two on your treks through the jungle.
Yes, Alex said, remembering.
He was a bit nervous, having the wolf so close, but he swallowed his fear and said, his voice shaking only a little,
It's nice to meet you.
The wolf nodded politely.
Marcus, is everything all right with the children?
The wolf's bright blue eyes shifted toward Alex briefly, and he left the rest of his question unasked. Mr. Today looked puzzled, and then his face brightened.
Oh, yes, quite fine. No, I wanted to speak with you about matters of Quill, which continue to change by the minute. Aaron Stowe knows of our existence now. Do what you can to keep him in sight. I fear he'll share the knowledge with Justine within days, if not immediately.
The great wolf nodded. Alex lowered his head, feeling fully responsible for it.
And a favor, if I may, Mr. Today said. Of course. I think you should alert the jungle creatures to what's happening. If we should come to war, I will surely offer my protection for those that wish it. But if any feel inclined to fight with us, Mr. Today's voice was humble, I would be grateful for their help, if it comes to that. Would you let them know?
The wolf regarded Mr. Today thoughtfully.
It would be better, I think, he said carefully, for them to hear it from one of their own, rather than from me.
Mr. Today tapped his lips.
So it would, he murmured. I'll speak to Aria.
He roused himself briskly and nodded, then pulled the 3D painting from the wall. He rolled it up swiftly and touched one end, and an iron band with a lock grew around it, holding it firmly closed. Mr. Today put it in a cupboard near the door and locked that as well. Alex knew it was for the best, but it was hard to see all those hours of work get locked up in a cupboard.
You should probably do that immediately, the wolf said.
He glanced out the big picture window in the lounge just outside Mr. Today's office. Alex followed his gaze and saw it was nearly dawn. He yawned despite his best intentions, but it had been a long and sleepless night.
Very well, Mr. Today said. Alex, perhaps you'd like to catch a few hours of sleep before training begins.
Alex jumped. Oh, yeah, of course.
I must go as well, Gunner said.
Mr. Today smiled and followed the two into the hallway. Gunner kept walking across the lounge, past the small kitchen, and into the room where all sorts of monitors and gadgets whirred softly. He hoisted himself on his hind legs and stood in the tube in the corner.
Take care, Gunner, Mr. Today said. You also.
Gunner's body shimmered and blurred before it disappeared. Alex blinked and rubbed his eyes, not quite sure what he had just seen.
There's a tube to the jungle?
Mr. Today put his hand on the boy's shoulder as they walked down the hall toward the balcony.
No, he said, that tube is quite different from any other. Please don't ever use it. It goes places you wouldn't want to go.
He turned around, pointed to the ceiling, and murmured, Glass. Liquid glass shimmered down and froze into place, sealing the area.
Mr. Today, Alex said, why don't you protect your office more carefully? I could still see the blackboards when the glass was in place, and sometimes the glass isn't up at all, you know.
I know, I'm growing forgetful, the mage sighed. Alex, I have nothing to hide. I am the same as anyone here. I hold few secrets, and those that need protecting are personal, and I keep them inside me, where no one can get to them. Just like everyone does.
He chuckled softly.
I hesitated to put up the glass shield at all, but my most trusted friends overruled me. The glass isn't there to protect my office. It's there to protect the most creative students like you and others who are able to see this hallway, and to give me a little peace and quiet. My sleeping quarters are connected to my office, you know. That's how I heard you when you went through the magical door.
Alex's eyes widened. He shook his head, amazed, puzzled, not at all sure what to say. And since he was sleep-deprived after the emotional, eventful night, His thoughts were completely jumbled. They stepped out on the balcony, and Alex turned to go down the boy's hallway to his room.
"I have so many questions."
Mr. Today smiled warmly.
"I have answers, but for now," he said, "you and I will be better off getting some sleep."
Alex nodded and stumbled down the hall and into his room.
"Hey, Clive, you old curmudgeon, you," he grumbled. "Wake me up in time for breakfast."
Clive surfaced and glared.
"You look like crud." "Your mum looks like crud."
Clive's gleaming nostrils flared. He melted back into the blackboard without another word. The Quillatory. Aaron Stowe tossed and turned on his cot, falling into fits of battered sleep. When the grey morning light pressed into his dormitory room, he gave up rest and glanced at the wall. There was only one door there. Surely it had been a nightmare. He began his morning ritual, as always. Since water was scarce in the desert-like land of Quill, and most of the supply was needed for the crops and cattle, each student of the university was given a pail of water every week for washing up. It felt like a bonus to most students, since households in the quadrants were given 2 pails of water for the entire family, no matter the size. Aaron secretly felt annoyed, because that meant that some of the child-bearers who had failed by producing 2 unwanteds fared the same as he, once their children had been disposed of. But today his mind was on other things. Methodically, Aaron wet his washcloth in the tepid water, being sure to squeeze the excess out of it carefully, and wiped his face. With a finger, he brushed the bit of fuzz above his lip that seemed to be growing these past few weeks as he neared his 14th year. He was certain that it was his facial hair coming in, and he wondered what it looked like. He wondered if it looked like Alex's. As he washed, he tried to clear his mind of the events of the previous night. He had convinced himself by now that Alex was indeed a dream, but he was terribly concerned about how weak his abilities were to control these dreams, which grew more intense each day. He ran the washcloth over his chest and arms, and nearly yelped when he pressed on the tender spot on his shoulder where his dream brother had hit him.
"What in Quill?" he murmured, massaging it. "Great cats, that smarts!"
His dream was all too real, yet all too impossible. "It didn't happen," he told himself firmly. Once dressed, he sat in a chair and waited until it was time to go to breakfast. He stared blankly at the door for nearly an hour, for he had gotten up early. He tried to think about his next project that the High Priest Justine had given him, perfecting the Quillatory vehicle operations. Today he would visit the Quillatory base for a tour, and he'd learn from the officers how the vehicles ran. From there he'd take the information and develop a plan. Hopefully it would be a plan that pleased the High Priest. This was his best chance at remaining in his high position as Assistant Secretary, and moving up to Secretary in a few months when the old maid had been disposed of. Aaron knew that solidifying his post in the palace was crucial to his advancement. The current secretary to the High Priest was an ancient woman, older than the High Priest herself. Soon she'd be sent on to the Ancients' sector of Quill, as her sight was failing. Once there, she'd never be seen again. Well, not by wanteds, anyway. It was the job of the necessaries to tend to the Ancients, put them to sleep and bury them. Aaron had learned all about the burying part because his father was a burier. Burying. Aaron shuddered. His thoughts had turned back to Alex and the day they'd made houses in the mud. Aaron admitted to himself that he hadn't actually seen a house in the random markings in the mud. At the time, he had wanted to see what Alex saw, but thinking back on it, he was glad that he didn't. "Alex." Aaron shook his head violently. "Stop," he said to himself, "or I'll be forced to report you." Aaron's thoughts turned again to his own advancement. Once the secretary was banished to the Ancients' sector, Aaron would be on an equal level with 5 of the 6 governors. There were only 2 people in Quill who stood in his way from that point. One was the High Priest Justine herself, who at 70 years old was not presumed to live more than 5 or 10 years. Aaron wasn't worried about her standing in his way when the time came, and she had no heirs. But the second obstacle would be infinitely more difficult. He was the senior governor, second in command. The man watched Aaron like a dog watches a gopher hole. Almost like he knew, Aaron was hot on his heels, ready to overthrow Senior Governor Haluki and become the next High Priest of Quill. Almost like he knew that Aaron would stop at nothing to succeed. A harsh clanging of metal on metal sounded outside his door. Aaron breathed a sigh of relief, got up, and strode to the doorway. When he opened the door, and indeed as all the other doors of the hall opened simultaneously, a flash of something silvery bright caught his eye on the floor of his room next to the door. It was a thin piece of metal, twisted into an odd shape. But this one wasn't brown, like all the rusty metal Aaron had ever seen. This was gleaming silver, a colour Aaron had never before laid eyes on, except in the dream the previous night. Swiftly he reached down and picked it up. He put it in his pocket to study later in private, and stepped into the line of students that would take him to the cafeteria for breakfast. At 8 o'clock, Aaron slipped out of the university and into the awaiting vehicle that would take him to the Quillatory base for his tour. In the front seat, next to the driver, was Governor Haluki. In the back, with Aaron, Governor Strang.
"Good day, Governors."
"Well met, Aaron," they intoned.
Now that he had an official title tied to the High Priest, it bothered Aaron that they continued to call him by his first name as if he were a child. But he said nothing, and instead turned his attention to the driver, a Quillatory lieutenant.
"Driver," he said curtly, as the vehicle chugged and squealed along the road.
"Yes, sir, Assistant Secretary Stow, sir."
That made up for the previous.
"What is your top speed?" Aaron asked.
25 posts, sir."
"Sustainable?"
"Not hardly, sir."
"How long?"
"I'd say 30 minutes.
"You'd say?" Aaron sneered.
30 minutes, sir."
"What happens at 31?
"Engine locks up, Mr. Stow. You hear the squealing now? Needs water and grease. Soon as we arrive, I'll rejuice so I can make it back."
Aaron's brow furrowed.
"Water? What's the water allotment for the base, gentlemen?"
Governor Strang spoke.
"We've just increased it to 30 barrels.
"A week?"
30 barrels, Strang repeated. "A day."
Aaron sat back in the seat.
"Thank you, gentlemen," he said evenly,
even though Senior Governor Haluki hadn't contributed a word, and even appeared to be nodding off in the front seat. 30 barrels a day. Aaron looked out his window, up through the barbed wire defense ceiling, and scanned the sky for rain clouds. Seeing none, he feared for the life of his first project, the favored farm. With water this scarce, and the Quillatory vehicles sucking up a ridiculous amount, something had to be done. Haluki, Strang, and Aaron toured the Quillatory base, walking past new wanted soldiers, practicing the traditional Quillatory death chants that would be used in battle should Quill ever come under attack. But Aaron's focus was on transportation today. He absorbed everything he saw and heard regarding the vehicles. Then the three returned to the vehicle for the short ride to the palace to meet with the High Priest Justine. The car creaked and strained its way up the hill, and Aaron, now feeling the exhaustion from too few hours of sleep the night before, let his thoughts wander once again to the strange episode during the night. It felt distant now, but something tugged at Aaron's mind. How could it be possible that behind that great fence was an entire world full of unwanteds? Aaron couldn't fathom it. There was no way they would fit, for one thing. Not according to the accounts he'd overheard from the governor's inspection about the small plot of land. And where would they hide? It was ridiculous. There was nothing but a building, some weeds, and a lake. A great lake of boiling oil. Aaron closed his eyes for a moment, telling himself to stop all thoughts of Alex forever before he did something to jeopardize his standing with the High Priest. Even so, he fingered the thin piece of metal in his pocket through the fabric of his trousers, wondering where else something like that could have possibly come from. Finally, the driver pulled the vehicle up to the palace. After the customary passwords and formal greetings with the High Priest, the four sat in the conference room. Senior Governor Haluki began the briefing, updating the High Priest with a status report from General Blair. Strang continued, speaking of their tour, and then the three turned to Aaron.
"And what are your findings?"
Justine asked. Throughout the briefing, something had niggled at the edge of Aaron's thoughts. He struggled to come up with something brilliant to say, but he was afraid that his comments would disappoint. He knew this was important. He knew this could prove that his first idea, the favored farm, was not a fluke. This could prove his brilliance. And perhaps, just perhaps, it might answer the burning question that had been plaguing him for months. The High Priest waited patiently for Aaron to answer. Haluki and Strang eyed him carefully. Aaron straightened his already extreme posture to a state of rigid.
"If it pleases the High Priest, I wish to offer a solution to the growing problem not only of the poor quality of the Quillatory vehicles, for indeed they are in a sorry state, but also a solution that will ease Quill's looming water shortage."
Justine's gaze didn't waver.
"Proceed," she said.
Aaron nodded.
"I believe there is a method that, to my limited knowledge," he said humbly, "we have not explored. Perhaps you will consider it worthy."
Aaron took a breath, knowing he couldn't stall much longer without actually making his suggestion, yet still trying desperately in his mind to figure out exactly how it would work. Haluki, who sat opposite Aaron, shifted in his chair, his narrowed eyes not leaving the boy's face. Strang nodded encouragingly, for he had an appreciation for the boy's mind. The High Priest Justine's mouth twitched, as if she were growing impatient.
"Out with it, then!"
Aaron nodded again, and pressed his lips together.
"Very well,"
he said, his esophagus feeling tight enough to stop his breath.
"I believe the solution to making the vehicles run more efficiently, and to freeing up the 30 barrels of water used by the Quillatory base each day, is..."
Aaron swallowed and continued.
"The Great Lake of Boiling Oil."
The High Priest Justine knitted her brows, the look on her face growing even more intense.
"And?"
she prompted sharply.
"And?"
Aaron's voice cracked, making him cringe and clear his throat.
"And," he continued, "therefore, as I have never seen the Great Lake of Boiling Oil, I'd like your permission to pay a visit to the Death Farm, so I might gather a sample for study and testing."
Haluki's eyes flickered for an instant before they returned to their cold steel-blue color. He shifted in his chair as the High Priest and Strang grew thoughtful.
"No, it's out of the question," Haluki said.
The High Priest offered Haluki a rare look of disdain.
"What?"
she said, her voice raised slightly as fire rose in her eyes.
"It's contaminated," Haluki said forcefully. "Polluted. Perhaps you've forgotten what goes in there."
Aaron and the young Governor Strang exchanged an uncomfortable look. The High Priest glared at Haluki.
"I'll thank you to leave that decision up to me."
She turned to the palace guards at the door.
"Guards, fetch a vehicle immediately, suitably large enough for the four of us."
Aaron's stomach flipped. Haluki hesitated, and then stood abruptly and made for the door.
"Make that three. I've another appointment. Good day, madam."
The three remaining at the table watched him go, and then looked at each other, none of them bothering to hide the shock on their faces at this strange behavior. Finally, the High Priest had the wherewithal to call out,
"Oh, for Quill's sake, Haluki! Come back here immediately!"
But the man was already gone. Visitors. And so it was that while Mr. Today was holding a meeting on the lawn to give the most recent developments to all humans, statues, and domesticated creatures, and while Arya called to order a similar meeting of all the wild creatures in the jungle, the squeaky Quillatory vehicle containing the High Priest Justine, Governor Strang, and Assistant Secretary Stowe came to a stop outside the vast iron gate. And because no one had ever come through the gate without 6 months' notice, and because only one person in all of Quill had a key to the gate,
and because the remaining three Gerinos had trickled to the fringe of the crowd on the lawn so that they could hear just a little more clearly, there was no one there to notice it. Except for Simba, whose keen senses were the best of anyone's. But by the time the great winged cheetah had bounded over a row of Artemaeans and thundered toward the gate, growling out a warning to Mr. Today that set the entire land of Artemae on their feet and reaching into their component vests for their magical weapons, it was too late. The gate was swinging open. A look passed between the great old mage and the stately cheetah. It was a look only two friends who have known each other for many, many years could understand. So while Mr. Today held up his hand to silence the Artemaeans, the stone cheetah stood solid, his enormous wings outstretched to their full span of 20 feet or more, and acted as a shield between the visitors and the crowd to keep the enthusiastic folk from descending on the three Quillans like 1,000 unwanted ghosts on the Eliminator. And just as the three stepped around the iron door, an enormous grey wolf burst from the seaside entrance of the mansion and bounded towards Mr. Today until he saw that he was already too late. But he was hardly noticed, since all eyes strained to see around or above or below the great expanse of Simba's wings. With a soft word and a gentle hand, Mr. Today motioned to the enormous crowd to be seated, and because they trusted him, they did so, most of them realizing, after thinking about it for a moment, that the visitors would be so overwhelmed at the sight of Artemae that they would likely need no containment. But Alex didn't notice everyone sitting. He didn't notice Lani tugging at his hand, and he didn't notice that when she was unable to pull him down, she stood back up and simply held his arm, and he didn't notice Mr. Today offering a slight nod of approval to Lani before he turned and walked slowly across the lawn to approach the guests. Alex merely stood and stared. And as he stood there, he thought that he should be feeling all sorts of emotional somethings inside his heart and his gut. But all he felt was a chilled emptiness, as if by their entrance, by their mere presence, the three Quillans had sucked all the emotion from the entire place into their cold veins, and it had stuck and frozen there. Alex stared into his brother's eyes and watched Aaron stare back, until Aaron could not help but look away. By this time, Claire Morning had weaved her way through the maze of Artemaeans, and she walked in step with Mr. Today. Florence joined Simba and stood with her back to him, facing the crowd and training her eye on Samhede, who looked like he wanted to disappear, and on Will Blair, who looked beyond eager to stand face to face with Aaron Stowe and blast him to tiny bits. But even Will saw that he would not win this challenge. Not now. He would have to save his venom for a new day, which now seemed nearer than ever. Of the three, it was Strang who was most shocked. But to say that the High Priest Justine and Aaron were not flabbergasted would be a fantastic lie, because they were quite beyond their capacities to speak. Their glances darted from the army of unwanteds and strange creatures before them, to the enormous mansion, to the sparkling blue-green sea, to the lush landscape and the forest in the distance. The High Priest Justine, her eyes shooting fiery bits of anger and betrayal after the initial shock of it all, drew herself up to her full height and pressed her thin lips together so tightly that they seemed to be a single white line painted on her rigid face. Governor Strang looked as if he might pass out at the sight of Simba, whose keen eyes moved from one Quillan to the next, and whose body was tensed and ready to strike should the need arise. And Aaron Stowe stared and stared, and inched backward as all his nightmares came true before his very eyes. Simba caught the boy's eye and growled such a deep, low warning that it sounded more like a roll of thunder from somewhere beyond the border wall. Aaron stopped his inching and stood still as a, well, still as a statue. Mr. Today, with Claire at his side, approached the visitors. "Greetings, Justine," said Mr. Today. He stood equally as tall, but scores less rigid, than the ruler of Quill. "Hello again, Aaron." Aaron's face grew pale. Justine's eyes flashed surprise as she glanced at Aaron, and then she turned her fury back on Mr. Today. Her voice, dripping with contempt, hissed, "Marcus!" And while Marcus Today had been preparing himself for this moment for many years,
It felt surreal. It felt beyond even the mage's own ability to imagine. It felt almost, not quite, but nearly pleasant, to finally be at this spot so that he could soon put it behind him. And while he was a gracious man, he knew that now was not the time to say another word. The High Priest, Justine, stood just as still, and the two faced each other for several long, uncomfortable seconds, both their minds whirring, deciding how best to continue this conversation in the presence of the menagerie. It was Justine who, by necessity, as the time ticked, made the first move. She knew Marcus would take it as a sign of weakness, yet she saw no other way around it other than to stand there until the end of time. And in the fashion of rulers throughout history, she said in a deathly voice, "I request a meeting in private." Mr. Today nodded curtly. "That can be arranged. At the palace, 8 o'clock. "Don't be ridiculous." Justine's face flushed hotly, but she kept her voice even. "I beg your pardon." "Here and now will do." The old mage turned to Simba. "Clear the lawn, please. Everyone inside, so that I might have a word with the High Priest and her comrades alone." Claire glanced at Mr. Today, concerned. He nodded. She hesitated, and then left him alone with the three Quillans, and began helping Simba funnel the unwanteds into the mansion. Within minutes, nearly all of the Artemians had streamed inside. Alex paused to cast one last cool glance at his brother. They locked eyes for a moment. Volumes of things unsaid passed between them. For the first time since the incident in the mud, Alex sensed his brother's true fear.
"Alex," Simba growled softly.
Alex broke the stare and slowly rounded the corner of the mansion, along with the dregs of the crowd, in step with Ms. Morning, as Simba waited patiently and then followed them inside. Alex found his friends in the lounge, where hushed conversations had taken the place of the usual music and laughter. He slumped down on the couch next to Megan, feeling like all the wind had been knocked out of him. He buried his head in his hands, rubbed the guilt from his eyes, and then looked up and started telling Megan and Lani the story. Soon Sean joined them, and then Samhede approached and sat down tentatively, exchanging a glance with Alex. Alex shrugged and nodded. It didn't matter now what Samhede knew or what he could do. Artemis was exposed, and it was Alex's fault. And then he shared what had happened the night before, from the archives floor of the library, to the 3D door, to the wolf. Except that instead of Will Blair, Alex said someone. He wasn't sure why, only that he thought it might cause more problems if word got out.
"Maybe they won't want to fight,"
Lani said, when Alex had finished.
"Are you stupid?" Samhede said.
He looked uncharacteristically anxious, and kept glancing at Alex, wondering if Alex had turned him in, but not daring to ask in front of everyone.
"Can you imagine how furious the High Priest must be, knowing that Mr. Today has betrayed her all these years? She's got to feel like the biggest fool ever. If she doesn't want to fight, and word of us gets out to the Quillatory, they'll take her down and come after us."
Sean nodded. "No doubt," he said. Megan chewed her fingernail.
"I hope Mr. Today is all right out there."
"Don't worry," Sean said. "There's nothing they can do to him. He could kill them all in an instant. They didn't appear to have any weapons, but I am surprised Justine didn't arrive with her guards. She must have great confidence in Governor Strang and Aaron, or else she's grown so confident in her power that she no longer feels she needs protection."
"That won't last long," Lani said.
The five sat in silence, waiting for news. When Earl announced that everyone was to return to the lawn, they all jumped up anxiously and headed for the tubes. Exposed. As the unwanteds filed out to the lawn, one by one their faces reacted to the new scene in front of them. In place of the enormous iron gate was, well, nothing. Nothing but a gaping hole that exposed the most desolate part of Quill. Beside the hole stood three of the Gerinos, peering curiously around the edge of the wall into Quill. Arya had gone back to the jungle to give an update.
"Hideous view, isn't it?" Mr. Today said, when they had all come to order. As it turns out, Governor Strang had a bit of a dizzy spell, and when he fainted, he pushed the gate closed with his head. It locks upon latching, of course. Tch, such a pity.
When the crowd offered quizzical looks, he explained,
"There's no other traditional way back into Quill. And with the only key to the gate in Justine's hand and no way to get over the wall, they were stuck, which put them into a bit of a panic."
He chuckled quietly at the memory and went on.
"So I gave Justine three options. To stay here forever, to be eliminated, or to go back to Quill through magical means. And as I didn't think Strang's gentle heart would be able to handle the magical means I intended to use on him, I decided instead to use magic to remove the gate entirely and allow them out that way."
But,
several voices sputtered and erupted into a melee of questions.
"Aren't you going to put it back? Can they come in here?"
Mr. Today held up his hands for silence.
"I understand your concerns. Yes, they can see in, just as we can see out."
After the next round of murmurs, Mr. Today nodded seriously.
"And yes, you may come and go as you please now, just as the people of Quill will be able to enter and leave here. Though I doubt we'll see anyone but the Quillatory coming in. The necessaries won't even be told about it, I'm sure."
This brought an outcry, and several unwanteds jumped to their feet in protest. Patiently, Mr. Today waited for silence, and then he waited a moment longer, as if the decision had weighed heavily on his mind. Finally, he spoke.
"Friends, hear me out, won't you?"
He paused, gathered his words, and went on.
"Now that we have been discovered, I loathe the idea of continuing to hide Artime. Be assured that the Quillatory is finding out about us right now, and they will soon be on their way to attack. They wanted all of you dead once, remember? Now they want me dead most of all. Do you think they will simply say, 'What? You've been tricking us all these years? Oh, that's all right, and leave us be?'"
He shook his head.
"No, and I've never led you to believe that. This is the big opportunity they have been saving all their rage for. The removal of the gate gives us, the people of Artime, more options. It allows for easy exit, and it allows us to see them coming."
A question came from the front of the crowd.
"But why not just seal us off completely from them rather than making us more vulnerable?"
Mr. Today smiled grimly, and then he turned and gazed over the beautiful blue-green sea.
"They can reach us from the sea, if they wish to, if Justine thinks of it. And she will, if it comes to that. Do you really want walls all the way around us, now that they know? Are we so afraid?" he asked, turning back to face them. "Just like Quill?"
He waited to see if anyone would speak, and when no one did, he continued.
"I'd rather die fighting to keep us free to do as we wish, fighting to be free to come and go as we please, fighting so we no longer need to hide, fighting the fear that all of you were programmed since birth to have, fighting against Quill's bigotry, which says brains and brawn are better or more important than creativity. And now, with luck, we may have a chance to prove ourselves."
The crowd remained hushed.
"You will all be faced with two options, fight or provide. For those of you who need or desire protection, or have medical skills, you will find protection and provisions in the mansion. Parents and families, I trust you will make your own decisions on whether to protect your children or fight. Both are noble deeds, and you must decide for yourselves what is best. Those who remain under protection will be able to assist with our soldiers through various ways, aiding the wounded, providing nourishment for those who fight, and caring for our youngest ones who need assistance. Most of the rest of you will likely choose to fight together to save Artime."
Mr. Today's eyes travelled to the very back of the crowd and alighted on Will Blair, who squirmed uncomfortably. And then the mage looked at Samhede, who looked at the ground.
"I need not remind any of you that if you choose to enter Quill without the benefit of an organized team, you are taking your life into your own hands."
Mr. Today looked at Claire and nodded to her.
"Ms. Morning is your commander-in-chief. You have done your drills. Keep your wits about you. You are far cleverer than they.
Use your imaginations to your advantage. And please, though you owe me nothing, I ask a favour.
He leaned forward in earnest.
Do not strike first. If there is to be a battle, let it be they who start it. As I often say, we do not know what will happen until it happens. Perhaps, by some miracle, they will choose...
Mr. Today stopped abruptly as Jim, the winged tortoise, flew in from the direction of the jungle and landed at his feet. The man bent down, and Jim whispered something in his ear, while the crowd inched forward, curious. It took a very long time for him to pass along the information, but no one expected otherwise where Jim was concerned. Will Blair took the tortoise distraction as an opportunity to make himself invisible and slip away. After a long moment, Mr. Today stood upright.
"Thank you, Jim. That's perfect."
He spoke again to the crowd on the lawn.
"Our friends of the jungle have agreed to stand with us and fight. They, along with the statues, will help protect the mansion at night so that we may rest in safety should the battle tarry on."
He took a deep breath and smiled encouragingly at his beloved unwanteds.
"Any questions?"
Lani raised her hand.
"How will we know when they're coming? And then what do we do?"
Mr. Today smiled warmly at the girl.
"We have spies, lookouts. They'll give us plenty of warning. You'll know almost immediately via your blackboards."
The old man glanced at Alex and teased, "Everyone, please keep your blackboards on full volume." Alex smiled weakly. He had nothing to worry about, since Clive no longer had a shush button.
"When you receive your orders, follow them. It's that simple. Have your component vests loaded and your weapons ready."
As the crowd went back into the mansion to prepare, Mr. Today called out to Samhede.
"A word, please," he said.
Samhede grabbed Alex's arm.
"Did you tell him about me?"
His eyes were wild.
"Yes,"
Alex answered truthfully.
"But I said that you probably didn't know what Will was really up to."
"I didn't know,"
Samhede said.
"You have to believe me. I thought we were just going to scare him. I didn't know."
Alex pressed his lips together. "You'd better go." Samhede bit down on his bottom lip, his brow furled, and stared at Alex with an intensity Alex had never seen before.
"Believe me," Samhede whispered, "I wouldn't do that to you."
Then he released his grip and jogged slowly over to the mage.
"Yes, sir?"
"There are a few things we need to talk about, and some things for you to think about," Mr. Today said.
He pulled him to a quiet spot on the lawn, and the two sat down together, Samhede staring at the grass nearly the entire time. When they had finished their conversation, Samhede walked slowly to the mansion, a stricken sort of look on his face, and went straight to his room. And Mr. Today scoured the mansion and grounds in search of Will Blair, alerting all of his contacts to watch out for the young man. But Will was nowhere to be found. Aaron.
"Well, well, well, Aaron Stowe."
As they drove back to the palace, the High Priest Justine turned to eye the young man.
"I understand you've met Marcus. How interesting."
"High Priest Justine, I can explain."
"Then do it."
She didn't raise her voice, yet the words boomed inside Aaron's head. Aaron sat on his hands, so the High Priest would not see them trembling. His voice cracked.
Last night, they came into my room. I mean, he did. Alex, my brother. I mean, the unwanted. I thought it was a dream."
"And?"
"And they tried to convince me."
"They?"
"Alex and that man with the hair. They dragged me through the wall into the death farmer's office and told me they were trying to protect me."
Alex took a deep breath.
"I escaped, thank Quill."
He nodded emphatically, as if to prove it to himself that he had done the right thing. The High Priest Justine's lips were pinched so tightly that they carried a faint tinge of blue. Her voice was wickedly calm.
"And you chose to lie to me and bring me there under the guise of refining oil, so that we could declare quite openly to the entire pathetic place that we were dumbfounded to discover their existence."
Her glare grew even sharper, and her voice lost some of its calm.
"And I thought you were intelligent, Aaron Stowe. I really thought you were bright. But all you've done is succeed in making us look like idiots. We're fools.
She spat out the last word. Aaron shrank back in his seat.
I thought it was a dream, he whispered. I've had some strange dreams lately. It was all too impossible. How could I have believed I could walk through a wall, and that my brother Alex was alive? Surely, Madam High Priest, surely you can understand.
How dare you defy me? Dreams? Be silent!
Governor Strang, somewhat recovered from the shock of the world, remained still as he drove the quillatory vehicle up the winding road to the palace.
Strang,
the High Priest said, her voice sickly calm again,
gather all the governors. Blast it, why did Haluki have to run off like that? I need him immediately, and the rest of you, General Blair, too. Can't you make this thing go any faster?
The boxy, rusted vehicle chugged and strained against the incline.
The pedal is to the floor. Nearly threw it, Your Highness, Strang said.
At the mention of General Blair, Aaron bit his lip and cleared his throat softly.
Madam High Priest, my unwanted brother told me that the General's own unwanted son was planning to kill me and take my place, using something called magic.
He dared not say any more. The High Priest did not acknowledge Aaron, and he sank back into the seat again. Soon they had reached the palace.
Follow me,
the High Priest Justine barked. Aaron hastened to keep up.
Dreams, she muttered. Grounds for dismissal and death.
Aaron's eyes opened wide with fear. He felt like he was going to throw up.
Guards!
The High Priest Justine's shoes snapped and clicked on the stone floor of the palace.
Do not let this boy out of your sight, she said, sneering. If he tries to run, kill him.
She turned abruptly into her office and slammed the door in Aaron's face. Aaron stood there for a moment, his shoulders sagging with remorse, and then turned and sat down on the floor, covering his face in his hands. What happens? After midnight, Will Blair, who had been hiding in the jungle, snuck back to the campus before his invisibility spell wore off and tubed his way secretly back to his room. He sent a message to Samhede and waited impatiently for his friend to answer his blackboard, but to no avail. Finally, he gave up and decided to go it alone. Abandoning his 3D door failure and no longer needing it, he sat in his room, surrounded by sketches of Alex Stowe, as if in a creepy sort of shrine. He concentrated for a few minutes, breathed deeply, and crossed his fingers. With all his might, he focused on theatrical thoughts of becoming his character, until his body and features transformed into the body of the person he'd been studying for nearly a year. Then he hoped against hope that he wouldn't bump into Alex on the way out of Artime, because that would indeed ruin everything. He strolled down the steps in the same manner as Alex would stroll, and when he passed Florence and Simba, he nodded like Alex would nod. Simba growled,
"Alex,"
and nodded in return. Will made his way to the gaping space in the wall and nodded to the gerinos there. Tina asked in a frightened voice,
"Where are you going?"
Will didn't want to tell the nosy gerinos anything, so he simply waved and set out on his quest to reach Wanted University before he was discovered. When Mr. Today got word that Alex, or someone looking suspiciously like him, had left Artime, he whirled around to check the blackboards, and then flew to the tube across from his office, shimmered, and disappeared. Hours later, he returned, exhausted, and empty-handed. By morning, there were two announcements written on the blackboards. First, the Quillatory, which had been preparing for this moment for so long, was already on the march. And second, Alex Stowe had gone into Quill during the night and never returned. Alex sputtered as he read the second.
What? Clive, is this your idea of a joke?
The board rippled in shiny black waves as Clive's face pressed through. He smiled grimly.
It's tempting, but I didn't do it. I've already alerted Marcus that you are here. He mumbled something about Tina making the report down by the gate and Will Blair using a disguise spell.
Alex clapped his hands to his forehead.
Oh, no! Clive, you've got to send out a notice that it's not true!
his stomach clenched, wondering if Will had